Welcome to Community Connections. This is Diane O'Brien, and with me today I have Kathy News from Playhouse in the Park. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Diane.
Welcome to the show. Your first time here with me.
It is.
Okay. Well, we're here today to talk about the show Once on This Island. Can you tell us a little bit about the show?
Well, Once on This Island is a big Broadway musical. It had a revival off Broadway 2 years ago, won Best Revival. Our production is just as big and wonderful. We've got a number of people who have been on Broadway, including somebody who was in the Broadway revival in it. It is a Caribbean fairy tale about a young girl named Timoun who rescues a boy from across the island. She's a peasant girl and he's a rich boy from across the island. And she falls in love with him and is determined to make a life with him, even though the two sides are very divided by their class. And during all this, she, as a young girl, was rescued from a flood by the gods. And there are four gods in the show: Agwe, the god of water; Urzuli, the goddess of love; Asaka, Mother Earth; and then they have Papagay, who is the god of death. And so the four of them she gets saved from the flood, and they make a bet to save her life. And then they make a bet against her and Daniel as to see whether love or death will overcome.
Right.
So
this show, like you said, it's a giant musical, and the music is just so much fun and so mm-hmm. uplifting. But Playhouse is known for doing very timely shows. I mean, shows, they don't shy away from what's going on in the news or the politics. And it just so happens that we just had Hurricane Dorian.
Right.
So what does it mean to do a show like this set in the Caribbean when we just had that hurricane?
Right. And it's not just that it's set in the Caribbean. It's set in the Caribbean after there's been a big storm. Mm-hmm. Timoun is rescued after a big flood. And the setting of the show is meant to be a shelter after a storm.
Mm-hmm.
And the setup is there's a little girl who's afraid after the storm, and the community comes together to tell the story of Timoun.
Mm-hmm.
So at the very beginning, it transitions from the shelter to the Caribbean island. They use the objects in the setting is the shelter. It's a huge set with scaffolding,
mm-hmm.
and it's set up with things that you would really find in a shelter, or the way something would look after a storm, with billboards that are ripped, but it's still very colorful and very mm-hmm. vibrant. And so they all come together to tell the story. And so everybody in the story, other than Timoun and Daniel, who is her love interest, they kind of go back and forth between their characters and storytellers. And they're all on stage the whole time. A lot of times they're dancing in the background while somebody is singing a song. It's in the Caribbean, but the characters in the play are also experiencing a huge storm.
Sure.
So the fact that this is happening after Dorian and other tropical mm-hmm. storms that are currently running through there, it's actually very topical. And the director, Robert Barry Fleming, wanted to really tie into that so that even though it's a fantasy, it's a fairy tale, it's actually based on The Little Mermaid loosely.
Oh, is it really?
It also brings the set to make it feel like this sense of community and a shelter, and kind of also tie it into what's happening in the world today, even while it's a fairy tale.
Right. And it's just so amazing that it is timely, and seeing that it's set in the shelter, it's a fairy tale. It could be set anywhere. It could have been set on a beach or in a, you know, community
right.
in someone's home. And it's just such an amazingly wonderful coincidence. I guess wonderful is the right word, but it just makes you think about what's happening in real life as you're watching the show. And it really,
right.
it was just so impactful that's the direction that this show took.
Right. And we're actually partnering with the Red Cross, and they're doing one of the actresses does an announcement at the end of the performance to ask for people to give money for Red Cross's disaster relief. And we have buckets out in
which
the lobby.
Which is wonderful.
And
yes.
It's the tie-in. The cast was really passionate about it, and it was actually their idea to do it.
Oh,
and
how wonderful.
And it's been really successful over
Great.
The weekend, our first weekend on it. They've been raising an impressive amount every night.
Right. So. Well, it's hard not to feel that connection. Like
mm-hmm.
we said, it's set in a shelter, and this just happened, and we've been seeing all the images on TV, and the story's about a young girl, and you start to think about, at least me as a parent, your own children in this situation. And so it's hard not to connect the two.
Well, and a lot of what the director, Robert, tried to do with it is he's also just trying to illustrate the resilience of the communities
mm-hmm.
too. That's why he wanted to have it in a community space. And that, you know, all of the storms that they've had on those islands, a lot of them have had a really hard time bouncing back. This particular, the setting of the play is sort of vague, but it's based on a book called mm-hmm. It's called My Love, or The Peasant Girl by Rosa Guy. And that is specifically set in Haiti. And so that's why he decided to make it sort of set in Haiti, even though it's a more general setting.
Okay. And the other thing I noticed, too, with the Red Cross, so it really does feel like the shelter. You've got the Red Cross blankets. Right. You've got one of the gods. Her dress is made out of a Red Cross. It looked like a blanket. I was looking at closely, but it looked like she had design on her dress, so to speak, but it was safety pins, it looked like.
Well,
did I see that right?
Well, you know, that one I'm not sure, but some of the other ones, the point is that what they did was, since it's taking place and the idea is they're in this shelter and they're telling the little girl the story, that they're using everything that they use in the show is things that they could have found in the shelter. Right. So some of the examples, I'm actually not sure about that one, but a couple of the other
I was looking at it closely because I was super impressed.
Well, that particular goddess, that's the goddess of love, is
love,
Lily,
yes.
And her headpiece is part of a fan.
Yes.
And then the water god, Agwe, his crown is actually, I think, really cool, made out of water bottles.
Mm-hmm.
And Papagi, who is the god of death, she is wearing...
wings.
Her wings are made out of umbrellas.
Mm-hmm. That are broken and all, mashed up.
And it looks really cool. So it's,
and it took me a second, too. It's one of those things that I thought, what's on her back? Are those wings? And and I started looking closer. And and same with the goddess, the god of love. You know, I was looking at, and the trim says Red Cross on that dress. At first, I thought it was a gown. Like, I thought, did she come to the shelter in a red gown?
It's like she wrapped
and
up
I
in
was,
a...
So, it was really cool to watch the show and watch those elements of creativity where they created some of the costumes out of what you would have found in the shelter to perform for this kid in the shelter who was scared, girl.
And, you know, part of the whole thing is that when she's a little girl in the flood, she's found in a tree and there's a ladder and they use the ladder for that. And there's like three level scaffolding on the set. Mm-hmm. And they use that as, you know, to represent being in a tree, to represent, you know, Papagay, the god of death, spends a lot of time up there sort of lording over people. And so they use the cots that are around in the shelter. Mm-hmm. They use the scaffolding that, you know, is meant to kind of, I don't know, hold up the building, and they're using it to tell the story.
Well, and I like the different clever ways that they, like you were talking about the tree and representing the tree, but also they have a car at some point, and they use the lights, the flashlights, as representation
the car. I thought they looked like the big emergency lights.
Well, there was some sort of light that you would have found in the shelter, and it took me a second. As they're walking around with flashlights on the stage, it took a second to click that. Wait. That's the car in the story. And I thought, oh, how clever.
Right.
Just utilizing what they would have found in the shelter and showing just that resourcefulness that the storytellers would have had in this story. So very cool.
Right. Yeah. I think, like I said, there's so many ways, because it's a fantasy and it's a fairy tale. You could tell it completely fantastical. You could tell it so many different ways. And Robert and the designers just decided to kind of take this shelter theme and sheltering from the storm and telling a story during a storm and kind of taking it from there, so that it's not realistically done, but it's done in a fantastical way, but also kind of grounded in this community and this shelter at the same time. And so it does remind you of the hurricanes
and
all of that.
You mentioned all the cots in there, which you would see in a shelter, and there's probably not a lot of space when people are in shelters, and to put on essentially a show like that or a play like that. And so it was interesting to see the movement and how they utilize the cots and how they also move around them. There's a lot of dancing, fantastic dancing in the show. But they do it a lot in place, or they have very specific ways that they move so they're not running into people. And so it doesn't feel overwhelming or crowded on the stage. And that was really fun to see how they choreographed the show.
Well, especially because everybody's on stage the whole time.
It's
a pretty big cast and none of them ever leave. And they sort of retire to the cots when they're not featured, or they kind of hang around in the back. Or a lot of times they're sort of off to the side, you know, dancing along with the numbers. You're right. There's a lot of movement. And Robert, who is the director, was also the choreographer. So I know he tried to use a lot of authentic
movement
from the cultures that they're representing in the show.
And it's very joyous and very enthusiastic to watch. And
it is.
It's almost a shame you can't get up and join them because it's just it's just a fun show.
Well, and even though it's a show about, you know, does love conquer death or death conquer love? And it's about a storm and all of this. It's actually a very inspirational, uplifting show. It's just, it's fun. It has a great message of hope and resilience and love.
Well, and I saw how the show, the show didn't end the way that I necessarily would have wanted it to, you know, the ending of the fairy tale, so to speak.
Right.
But in retrospect, just like the message of the whole show, you still left feeling so uplifted and optimistic.
Uplifted because even though...
Because life doesn't always go.
We don't want to spoiler how it ends. But it's, even though it's not, you know, it's not a rom-com. It's this... You know, it has the god of death and other things like that in it. But in the end, what happens, you know, is good for the island and good for the community. And there's hope and togetherness at the end of the story. And that's what really of the point of it is it's very inspirational and uplifting in its own fairy tale way. Because, you know, fairy tales are...
They don't always end the way you want them to end.
Right. But I think people seem to be happy with the way this does end in the end, because it does leave you feeling good and like that it had a point, that the things that happened that were dramatic, they had a point to the story, about coming together as a community and hope and.
Right. So there were so many songs in here and so many different characters, and people played sometimes two different characters. Did you have a favorite song or a favorite character in the show?
I will say that I have not been able to get We Dance out of my head since I saw it on Thursday night. And that's the opening number where they sort of introduce all the characters and tell the story. That song is just so catchy. I can't stop singing it. I will tell you that I just looking at our own social media over the weekend, people really were talking a lot about the song, The Human Heart, which is sung by, Christina Acosta Robinson, who plays Azuli, the goddess of love, because people were just amazed with her voice. And I saw a lot of also comments on, the song Mama Will Provide is always a big showstopper.
That was one of my favorites.
And, the actress who plays her, Bree Jackson, she can kill it. I mean, the vocals are amazing.
They are.
And all of them are. I mean, they're all really amazing singers and just really top notch. And we have there's a couple little girls in it who go to SCPA.
I know. It's a mouthful. Right?
And Ken Early, who's a local actor, is in it. But we have a lot of people who, like I mentioned at the beginning, who have been on Broadway and are super high caliber, amazing singers. Everybody is. And the young woman who plays Timon, she's very, you know, she's a young actress and she
was
amazing.
Phenomenal.
She was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. She could sing, she could dance, and she really carries the show because she does a lot.
Well, and even the gods, they're sort of pillars in the show as well. And they're singing and dancing and acting all of it. The whole cast is
the
pretty
whole,
amazing.
The whole listening to it is amazing because the caliber of the voices. I mean, people just really some showstoppers.
Well, and especially you mentioned the young girls, you know, with the exception of A Christmas Carol, you don't often cast a lot of kids because it's a lot of work, I'm sure, to have the kids in the show. And they were amazing, amazing addition to the show.
We cast kids when it calls for kids.
Sure.
And there's been some other ones over the years. It kind of depends on the year. And in this case, we double cast it so that the two little girls take turns. There's one girl part and there's two girls that are taking turns.
Okay.
That we cast locally the same time we were doing Christmas Carol casting.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. And then, not to give any spoilers away, but the set design, we talked about how it looks like a shelter and, we've got the scaffolding in there, but it was amazing to me at the end. There was such an interesting aspect to the stage. It's surprising. And I love that about Playhouse shows, how there's always some sort of aspect and you walk away thinking, I didn't think theater could do that. Mm-hmm. And so that's so fun with this show too. You get to the end and you think that you're done with surprises or you think you know what's going to happen next. And I love that about Playhouse.
Well, and I think the set designer and the director, you know, they came up with some amazing concepts. All of that is built locally by our local scene shop that's right up the street from here on Gilbert. And they did, you know, again, we don't want to spoil it, but I will tell you that we had a couple of comments on Facebook, and I actually got an email this morning from subscribers who actually this subscriber and somebody else said they had seen the Broadway revival. And mm-hmm. so they were like, well, we're not sure. Like, how could it be as good as that? And they both said, like, the subscriber said today it was better than the Broadway revival. And at first they thought the set was kind of just this scaffolding and like, okay, that's fine. And it is really gorgeous and cool. Until there's a little bit of a transformation at the end. We'll just say that.
Right. We don't want to give that away.
That it seems is really worth it. And it just shows the amazing skill of the designers and the local crew to figure out how to do that. Because what happens is the designers and the director come up with ideas, and then it's the Playhouse staff who are based locally who have to kind of
figure out
how to
make
it
work. Right. Exactly. And I walked away, my friend and I walked away wondering, so how do we think they did that? You know, and that's so much fun when you can walk away from the show and it's exciting and uplifting. Mm-hmm. And then you also, there's things that happen in the show that make you wonder and think and question how did theater pull that off?
Well, and that's the thing I think about theater compared to, let's say, a movie or a TV show is that whatever we pull off, we did it right in front of you live. It's mm-hmm. not CGI. It was not set up over here. Whatever we did, we did it in front of you. It's kind of like last year we did that show Tiny Houses and we mm-hmm. built the house in real time in front of people. And so that's one of the things that theater can do in outside of, say, a movie is that it's you're in the room where it is happening.
Okay. Well, this is an amazing show, and I would recommend that you get tickets if you don't already have them. Can you tell us how to get tickets?
You can visit cincyplay.com or call our box office at 513-421-3888.
Okay. And are there audio described shows or?
Yes, there's an audio described show on Saturday, September 28th at 4 o'clock.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for coming in, Kathy.
All right. Well, thanks for having me.
Now for a little more on Once on This Island. The Heart of Once on This Island is the musical's uplifting calypso-infused score by songwriting team Aarons and composer Stephen Flaherty. The duo has been collaborating since 1988, creating the music for such household names as Ragtime, Seussical, My Favorite Year, and Anastasia. Both the original film score and the 2017 stage adaptation currently running on Broadway. Aarons and Flaherty have garnered countless theater accolades, including Tony Award for Best Original Score for Ragtime, the Drama Desk Award for Ragtime's lyrics, and several nominations for Grammy and Academy Awards. As a team, they received the 2014 Oscar Hammerstein Award for Lifetime Achievement. Regarding Once on This Island's dazzling score, Flaherty tells Theater Life he was inspired by Brazilian music, Paul Simon's Graceland with its motifs of Southern African music and Caribbean beats. He continues, "It became a musical adventure. By using an array of world music elements, I embarked on creating a theater score unlike any I'd heard." At the Playhouse, Once on This Island is directed and choreographed by Robert Barry Fleming, who began his tenure as artistic director at the lauded Actors Theater of Louisville in June. Prior to his move to Louisville, Fleming served as Associate Artistic Director at Cleveland Playhouse and as Director of Artistic Programming at Washington, D.C.'s Arena Stage. Once on This Island is a co-production with Actors Theater of Louisville, marking the Playhouse's first collaboration with the Distinguished Theater since their shared production of Doubt in 2008. The Playhouse's Once on This Island combines all of the ingredients for an unforgettable theater experience: an all-star director, a colorful island backdrop, an energetic cast of characters, and a percussive dance-in-your-seat score that will stick with you long after the show is over. Audiences of many generations, including those families with children ages 10 and up, will enjoy this musical's playful, life-affirming humor and will connect to Once on This Island's poignant theme of family, community, and the power of love. It's been almost 30 years since the musical Once on This Island first debuted on Broadway. Now it's back on the boards in an exciting, immersive way, courtesy of director Michael Arden. The 8-time Tony-nominated revival is based on the novel. It's been almost 30 years since the musical Once on This Island first debuted on Broadway. Now it's back on the boards in an exciting, immersive way. The 8-time Tony-nominated revival is based on the novel My Love, My Love, and was written for the stage by Lynn Aarons and Stephen Flaherty. Here's an interview with the two of them. Let's go back to the very beginning. Where did the idea of Once on This Island come from? Lynn Aaron says, we had just finished doing Lucky Stiff at Playwrights Horizons, and we were looking for our next project, and I was browsing around in an old Barnes & Noble, and I came across this little colorful novel that was on the shelf of used books, and I opened it up to the first page, and the words just leapt off the page at me. Quote, there is an island where rivers run deep. It was this very evocative language, so I bought it for $1.50. I read it in about an hour, got in a cab, and went over to Stephen's apartment and said, we just found our next musical. When did you know you had something special on your hands? When the show opened on Broadway back in 1990, it received 8 Tony nominations. Lynn says, we started to feel that this show was special and unusual because early on in rehearsals, watching director and choreographer Garciela Danielle with her brilliant vision, it suddenly began to emerge as this through-sung, very emotional story that moved us and everyone in the room. Stephen Flaherty says, on the first day of rehearsal, there was something magical about the piece itself, and that original cast brought so much of themselves to the table. And after the first day of rehearsal, I said to Graciela, this is very, really special. This doesn't happen every day. And she just smiled and said, yes, we all felt that. The process of creating the show improved all of our lives. This was the height of the AIDS epidemic, so a lot of us were caregivers. We were falling in love, we were helping our friends heal, and there was a lot of positive energy circling our show. So talk about crafting the sound for the show. Stephen says, I was fortunate because during that period of time, I was listening to a lot of world music for just my own pleasure, and when Lynn found the book, it got me thinking, using world music sounds and combining them in a theatrical way could be the basis for a theater score. The idea of the piece informed the content of the musical style. Lynn says, as for me, I was doing a lot of research into the customs, culture, and religion of the Caribbean, Haiti, Trinidad, that whole part of the world, and it just seemed to bring on this language that was very visual and almost simple, but very poetic. That's how it came out. Lynn, you once told me that Once on This Island is the only show of yours where you wouldn't change a thing. Lynn says, yes, we changed one tiny little thing at Michael Arden's request for this revival. It's when our main character, Timoun, has made it to the other side of the island and she goes into her love interest bedroom. We musicalized a little bit of dialogue, but other than that, every time I see the show, I just sit there thinking, there's not a thing that I could do better. Stephen says, in a certain way, it's a perfect show. It's a perfectly formed 90-minute show, and Lynn, if you know her, she tends to love to revise. So the fact that she's pleased with this, it's a huge statement. You both made your musical debuts with this musical. Take me back to the show's opening night. Lynn says, it was at the Marriott Marquis, and it poured rain, and we said, oh, the gods are saying hello. It was one of those joyous opening nights. The original company paraded in all African garb. It was a line of kings and queens. It was one of those opening nights where we had already been reviewed glowingly off-Broadway, so we assumed it would pretty much be the same, so there was not a lot of stress in the room. You put Broadway favorite and Tony winner LaChance on the map with the original Once on This Island. Now you're giving that chance to 2018 Tony nominee Haley Kilgore. Why was Haley the right choice for Timoun? Lynn says, it was so obvious when LaChance walked into the room. She radiated with star quality, and the same thing happened with Haley. And you don't see that very often. She walked confidently and joyously. Stephen says, I thought Haley was an absolutely amazing raw talent. And when she came in the room, she had an amazing passion about herself. She was an extraordinary actress for someone so young. She danced very well. She reminded me of a young LaChance. How did Michael Arden sell you on his concept for Once on This Island, this immersive world with water, sand, and fire? Stephen said, with a lot of determination, and he laughs. Lynn says, Michael started out wanting to do an a cappella version of this show, and we were not into that. We said the show needs a kick and band. It needs drums and percussion, and he went away, and a year later he came back with all of these visuals. He had a lot of research laid out for us. He really did his homework. And we were so impressed by how he had taken the original idea and rethought it into this amazing new form. We were enthralled and impressed with him. And during the first week of tech rehearsals, I had no idea what was happening. I was like, there's a sandpit and a goat, and there are costumes made out of old t-shirts. And little by little, I began to see how utterly imaginative it all was. Welcome to Community Connections. This is Diane O'Brien.